Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today we're covering Season 5, Episode 8, Returnal Friendshine of the Spotless Mort.
Here's Aaron with the recap.
The Smith family goes on a cruise, freeing Rick up to do some things around the house. For example, resurrecting his best friend, Bird Person, via some extremely high-stakes Inception-style memory heists that happen to hit a rich vein of deep show lore to mine.
All right, Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I thought this episode was amazing. It's not the funniest episode, although it had some things that really made me laugh hard, like the smash cut from the Inception bullshit to, you know, Rick and Bird Person on the table foaming at the mouth and twitching and the garage computer getting increasingly worried about the situation. I thought that stuff was really funny, but I think what a lot of frustrated Rick and Morty fans have been waiting is to get to the quote-unquote good stuff, the continuity episodes. Like X-Files before it, Rick and Morty is starting to feel like, you know, the monster of the week shit's just not cutting it. If the cigarette smoking man doesn't show up in the form of evil Morty or Space Beth or, you know, Phoenix Person, it's a fucking bullshit episode. And I have some sympathy for that. But, like, I guess if you were that type of person, this thing seemed to hit, like, that, to scratch that itch. Like, you finally got it. So I thought it was a great episode. It doesn't surprise me. Like, there's almost universal praise for this. Everywhere I've gone on the Rick and Morty fandom. And I was also did some like little bit of research, and it seems like the canon episodes are universally the most popular in terms of IMDb rating, in terms of ratings. The stuff that advanced the plot is clearly what brings all the boys and girls to the yard. So I thought it was a great episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I like the episode too. I will say I agree with you that it was not the funniest. It was certainly funnier than last week for me with the Gotron stuff. But I guess, you know, I'm looking for the chocolate and the peanut butter. I want the comedy and I want the continuity when we get it. And in this episode, like, they brought the continuity, but I wasn't laughing as much as I had in previous episodes. And that's fine. There were a few laughs, like you said. I think, like, some of the stuff they did with just the mind, you know, the idea that they're in the mind of Bird Person and, you know, he remembers Rick in a certain way and that gives him the technology, but not, you know, the results of the technology. It was kind of funny, especially on the second time through. I'm like, oh, OK, that's funnier now that I know what's coming. But yeah, I don't know. In general, I like this episode. I think we found we might have found out some new things about the characters. It's tough to say because we're all inside Bird Person or Phoenix Person's mind, right?
I'm glad you said that because I was wondering what, because these appear on the surface to be some heavy, heavy canon revelations about Rick.
Right.
But I think what you just said is the wiggle room for, I don't think they can walk all this back because some of it reinforces other, like, you know, starting to put together a piece of like consistent lore. But like that, well, that was Bird Person's fragmented memories that the Federation had fucked with. And that was the, you know, is his best friend Rick the same Rick that he even met at the festival? Like, it's like there's there's a lot of wiggle room there for sure.
Oh, yeah, tons. And so anything, yeah, that they brought up, and I recognized that immediately. I was like, oh, boy, but they're really leaving a lot of space for them to get out of whatever they do in this episode. But also, I don't know. Is that what you want to do as a creator of a show? Do you want to? Yeah, I know they've done it before, right? There was the I don't know, the sit down with John Hamm diner episode where they had a whole bunch of backstory about
Nathan
Beth.
Fillion, but sure.
Or, yeah, sorry, Nathan Fillion, diner episode. And, you know, they left that door, like, wide open to the point where Rick says, yeah, none of that shit was real. But who
like
knows?
That's, yeah, I mean, we're going to have a whole, I'm sure, discussion about the canon implications. Maybe we should get to that right away. But I just also want to ponder, is John Hamm the poor man's version of Nathan Fillion, or is Nathan Fillion the poor man's version of John Hamm? Because now that you've made it, the comparison is unmistakable.
Sure. I feel like John Hamm, Nathan Fillion was doing it before John Hamm, so it's gotta be John Hamm is the poor man's Nathan Fillion. But they're both the,
like, insanely charismatic leads of essentially one iconic role. Mm-hmm. And have kind of been culturally coasting on that. Like, I mean, it's not that they, neither one of those guys have done work, even good work, that you could cite, like, oh, well, Fillion did that one, you know, sing-along blog, and he was in Destiny 2, and John Hamm was in, he was pretty good in Baby Driver, wasn't he? But, yeah, huh.
I didn't even mean to bring that up, but you're right.
I'm on vacation. I'm having I'm literally on vacation. I'm in Pennsylvania at a lake recording this thing, and I'm having a good time. So, hopefully you'll forgive the divergence. Before we get to the actual, I want to stay on kind of like the meta topic. You know, kind of show notesy about the actual show notes. Did you hear that there's not going to be a Rick and Morty next week?
Oh no, I didn't.
Instead, they're airing the final two episodes back to back as a solid hour of Rick and Morty as a giant size season finale.
Apparently, it's not just a week. It's going to be like a month, September 5th.
Oh, shit. You're right. You're right. That is.
It's according to a promo that was released by Adult Swim. I don't know. I saw it on their YouTube channel, but. Yeah, the season 5 finale is going to be September 5th, Sunday, September 5th at 11 p.m. Eastern.
But it is going to be the final two episodes.
It is.
I wonder if they, because this is very, I mean, this is very common that, like, they'll start airing a season of content before the season is finished production.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, some things like captioning of the episode and even scoring the episode in some cases for hyper. We interviewed the composer for like Breaking Bad a long time ago, and he said that like sometimes he gets the final episode like a week before it airs and he has to score it.
Yeah.
I wonder if the animation got ahead of them and they just messed up the how long it taken them to finish the finishing touches, or if they maybe did some more voice work that had to do, like, what do you think's going on here?
And then they said, well, sorry, Rick and Morty, perhaps our most popular show on Adult Swim, we don't have a spot for you for another month, so you're gonna have to get in line. I mean,
no, sure, it's more like, of just like it's gonna take him that long to finish it, I guess.
That seems like a big stretch to me. I don't know why animating something would take a month, or how you get like so out of sorts with your production schedule that you need a full month after the last episode aired to get something done. It seems crazy to me that would happen, but it also seems crazy to delay this for no real reason. So there's got to be a reason behind it. It's not a marketing thing, right? Because this seems ass backwards if you're trying to market this show.
I mean, the only thing I can think, like, if I just say, okay, if I'm going to reject the production problem issue, that either something came up to where they were uncomfortable politically dealing with something, they had to cut it, or like Dan and Justin had a real brainstorm as far as canon and they wanted to reshoot something, or they just, you know, like the animation wasn't quite up to snuff and they had to finish it, or it just took longer. I don't know, but if I take it, like, if that can't be the case, then the only thing I can think of is like if Adult Swim is looking at these ratings and looking at people being unhappy and they know they have like a banger 3-episode arc, what if they drop the first one that they thought would make, you know, it's like, well, we'll get the canon heavy one out there and then we'll take a month off to let the buzz build back up, right? And it almost be like, you know, then we have build it into this big event and kind of, but that seems pretty like, I don't know, Does Turner Broadcasting think that, like, essentially Rick and Morty is a flop, season 5 is a flop, just because a couple of loud people on the internet are saying that? Like, I don't know. It seems crazy.
They'll listen to the numbers. I mean, you know, if it's a flop, they'll know it based on viewership. They won't give a shit what, you know, people are saying on some minor subreddit, right?
I wouldn't think so. But on the other hand, I could also see, like, yeah, because we always talked about how, like, in The Walking Dead, how they would do something and it pisses off the fans, but they continue to talk about it and deal with it on the show as if that's, you know, like, that's not the case. Everybody's love. It'd be kind of refreshing for a company to course correct for that. It's like, ah, something's not working, so let's try to do something to boot and rally the season. But it also seems insane to be like, CEO's like, fuck it, push it off a month, let's build some enthusiasm. You know, it's like, what?
And I mean, Rick and Morty has, in my opinion, fucked this up many times. Waits between seasons have been extremely long. There's been strange delays, like mid-season, if I recall. I don't know why this show, almost uniquely, like, I'm trying to think of other shows that have had this many scheduling problems. Hiccups. Yeah, and I they're few and far between. This show seems to have them all the time.
I mean, not to put a fine point on it, but Dan's other production, Community, was beset by all kinds of problems behind the scene. Mm-hmm. And one of the recurring gags on his podcast was he was always writing, like, months behind writing a script for a movie he had to do, or months behind turning in a draft for a treatment of something, blah, blah, blah. So, like, it could be that just he's kind of messy. This whole, like, when I think of Justin Roiland, Dan Harmon, Rob Schraub, I do not think, boy, just meat and potatoes, workmanlike,
right,
steady efficiency, set your clock to it. Like,
bastions of reliability.
I think frantic creativity and intense shame and self-loathing and, you know,
procrastination, sure.
Yeah, that's not a well-oiled machine, but it does give you Rick and Morty.
So. And it's why I identify with them somewhat, right? Like, I have a lot of those same problems. So, I don't know, man. Delaying it a month, I'm not sure if it's going to build hype or just kill it, but that's what they're going to do.
I mean, it seems like it's a big shot in the arm to Community. Like, these were, like, you know, like, the threads and the forums and stuff are hopping. Like, people are really, you know, they got fresh lore to speculate about, so.
Yeah, but what if they don't deliver?
When I heard.
How can you deliver on the expectations of, like, taking a month off? People are going to be building this up as, like, oh, they must be working on something enormous, right? This must be.
Oh, of course.
The biggest Rick and Morty of all time.
Evil Morty, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to get that Story Lord conclusion with the dark version of Mr. Poopy Butthole and marching with the army of evil Rick Spat is back with, like, yeah, I don't know, because I guess we should get into, do you want to talk about the episode in general? Or do you want to get to the canon implications up front? Because I feel like that's the juicy stuff that people want to talk about, and just us talking about our favorite moments of the episode, maybe not as much.
Yeah, let's get into it, but let's do a quick break first.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which, given last weekend, seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Okay, I want to talk canon implications of this, because you hit on something else about, you know, the previous, this is the season three finale, because like or season three premiere. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the core material comes out of the season two finale, which was the Wedding Squatchers. I can't believe that was back in season two.
Right.
And then going on to season three, when they're in the diner with, it turns out, the poor man's version of Don Draper, as we just established, he says that lore about him being kind of a simple Rick, essentially, that loves his wife and daughter and doesn't want to gallivant around dimensions because he's already got the most important job anyone could have, a father, and the other Ricks being kind of jealous and resentful or whatever the fuck they are, sabotage. Like, their job is to get the Ricks back onto the interdimensional Rick plot, kill his wife and child. He mentions that's a fake memory, which allowed him to take control over it and hijack, and, you know, you guys have seen a fucking episode.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode seems to indicate that Birdman's own memories and Rick himself think a version of that that's very close to the fake memory is true. Did you agree or disagree with that analysis?
No, I agree with that. I don't think it's like actual confirmation, because who knows, this could be just a story that Rick uses when he's trying to deflect emotionally, and people ask about it, but, and, you know, maybe that's what he told Bird Person, right? But it certainly adds fuel to that fire.
Yeah. And when he's having conversations of a memory version of himself with himself, and there's no one, this isn't performative for Bird Person. Bird Person's consciousness is in another zone.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess, like, if I'm really putting my devious showrunner hat on, I could be like, oh, it's always a performance because this is all in Bird Person's subconscious and Rick knew that. But like, it's starting to get pretty strained. I'm more of starting to get to like the fake part of the memory was Beth had pigtails actually and not a ponytail when she got exploded by a bomb. Right. Uh-huh. Like, cause like anything that you intentionally fabulize would make the memory fake and I guess let you hijack a Nathan Fillion brain in a bug body. I just feel like that's the thing is like, yeah, you're right. They got a little bit of wiggle room on some of this stuff because it is all memories. And there's trauma. There is intentional cyber fuckery, mental fuckery by the Federation. But like, the more these things start to reinforce with each other, the more people will be frankly outraged with like, oh, it's just a Birdman memory. None of that shit can be relied upon.
And this whole show is built on that idea, right? Like
that tension.
The tension between like what's real and what isn't, or like what happened in this version of Rick's universe or dimension and what happened in different versions, right? Because there are infinite number of Ricks out there. It's there's always wiggle room.
Yeah. And I guess that's it's almost like a meta commentary on the show, because like, you know, Rick is quick to say none of this matters. There's a version of a battlefield where we won, a version where we lost, a version where the battle never even happened. There's a version of Rick that stayed, a version of Rick that left, a version of Rick that came back and murdered himself to make sure that he, you know what I mean? That went on to vengeance fuel. Like, it's weird, but I think that's also why Rick and Morty is very cool, because it's one of the few shows that really grapple with what the fuck the multiverse means in a serious kind of like, not just like, well, the, you know, the heroes are going to figure it out and solve it in the, you know, 2.5 hour movie or whatever, but like really like lives with it in a sitcom kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also, you know, it allows them to tell stories in different ways too, and make different things more significant, because I do think there's significance to this, even though we're in one particular dimension inside one particular Bird Person's brain. I don't even know if this is the same Bird Person necessarily that he met at Birdapalooza, Flargabarg, yeah, or whatever.
Is this C-137 bird person that C-137 Rick's best friend, or is this, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows? But ultimately, like, that's the nature of the storytelling in this show. And I think you have to look at things like this as being significant, even if there is wiggle room, because the show is choosing to tell you these things, right? And unless it goes and directly subverts it, I think we have to kind of take it as canon.
I agree. I want to run, maybe if you've thought about it, because I've thought about this a lot. I've done a lot of reading and I've got a couple of like big picture canon ideas to run past you. Do you have any?
Oh, okay.
Or do you just want me to propound you with them? Okay.
Yeah, hit me.
Is it possible that there are essentially two Rick factions, the Abandoners and the Reclaimers? So like, the Abandoners are the Ricks that invent a portal gun and realize that everything is stupid and subjective and there's no reason to care about your family at all. And they essentially turn into nihilists, and they are opposed by the Ricks that rejected all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some kind of like MCU civil war, and the Reclaimers have essentially eradicated the nihilist Ricks. Are you fall? I feel like I'm an insane person saying this, but like, so like, you've got this phenomenon where all the Ricks that abandoned their family have left their family behind, and all the Ricks that wanted to keep their family had their family murdered by those other Ricks. So now this adds a lot of angst to the show, right? Because our Rick is one of those who wanted to keep his family. His family is murdered. And he's adopted a family of a Rick who abandoned them.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to put up with this baggage of his family thinking that he abandoned them.
Interesting. Yeah,
he's like,
you're
unfairly
starting...
persecuted by his own family for the shit that he didn't do.
It could be. That would be an interesting direction to take this, certainly. And in like the infinite number of Ricks sort of way, starting like a Rick civil war. Based on the lines of like who Rick is, not about like, oh, you know, some external thing happened. It's like, no, the Ricks reacted in different ways to different events. And now they're trying to sort of enforce their will on all of the timelines or all of the universes.
Yeah. Or they had to, kind of like, this reminds me, I mean, this is the cool thing about the explosion of sci-fi fantasy, is everything starts to adapt from everything else, because this is starting to feel very, you know, I don't want to get into spoilers for the last season of Loki, but Marvel Phase 4 seems to be very much into multiverses and like the idea of a multiversal timeline where like the 99% of the people that invented the time travel technology might be good, basically decent people, but that 1% are fuckers. And they're like, will take over and destroy everything. Mm-hmm. So the good ones have to destroy them. It's kind of like the paradox of intolerance. I wonder if they're playing with something like that here.
Could be.
Which explains why like there's a universality of these Rick experiences, because you're, you know, that finite curve, maybe that finite curve is the Ricks that have been allowed to exist by the Council of Ricks or whatever. I don't know.
Right. I don't know, man. It would be a cool way to go. And I think, like, if that's what they're doing, then they're taking their sweet time evolving it. And I kind of like that.
Well, they got their time, right? Like, why bust their ass
of
trying
time.
To jerk? Yeah. Plus, it's like, I also could see them, like, having a Google Doc of, like, when they're farting around at the table. Like, if someone has a solid idea for, like, you know, like, for example, it's always kind of stuck in my craw why they hang around with Gear Person. Because he's such a shit and he betrayed Rick in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But the reveal that, like, you know, oh, well, that's actually Gear Dude, who was a cool, badass freedom fighter. That was a kid brother that, like, Rick and Bird Person kind of kicked around with out of sense of obligation and duty and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun. But, like, do they, like, when they come at a table, like, okay, that's a great idea, write it in the lore document. And when they get enough, like, when they get, like, 5 pages of solid shit like that, they're like, all right. Hey, we got 5 pages in this here Google Doc. It's time to shit out a lore episode. because here's the thing. Did you see any of the some of the commentary? I guess that after the season 2 finale, one of these fans, Uber fans of Rick and Morty, painted this, like, it looks like a Magic the Gathering kind of like piece of artwork of like this Blood Ridge or Blood Gulch or whatever, Blood Valley, whatever the Serenity Valley pastiche is.
Right.
It's like photorealistic, a bird person cradling a dead bird person. Rick with his hand on bird person's shoulder, super squanchy in the background, looking forlorn, stacks of dead bodies all around. And Dan, in the last year's virtual Comic-Con, among other things, said that he bought a print of that and he put it above his mantle as a reminder of how fucking serious people take this fucking canon, and as a way that he would never forget to reward that seriousness, which is why I think that, like, all this talk about, you know, Dan not caring and Justin not caring, just cash out, I don't know that that's really true. I just think it's like they care so much that they're only going to do it when they know they have something cool to say. Is it possible that Beth is inevitably murdered? His family, if Rick stays, he's always murdered by some renegade Rick. Mm-hmm. And if Rick leaves, then Beth survives into adulthood to make Morty and Summer and all that stuff. But Rick has to then be the abandoner. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those things where, like, the waveform sometimes collapses into a certainty, like of an if there, like there's infinite diversion of what happens, but there's like these some decisions that are like pivotal. Is that something that they're trying to hint at?
Maybe. Yeah, I guess how sci-fi are they going to take the canon of this, you know?
Because the other thing is, like, the other thing about the implication of, like, you know, maybe Rick's taken on his guilt and baggage from evil Rick's but he, you know, what else is he going to do? Sit and try to come back to Beth and say, hey, I need to explain the multiverse and all that stuff. She has definite memories of, like, a sci-fi Rick raising her. Like, mm-hmm. you remember the Fruity Loop Land episode, the ABCs of Beth. Either Beth survives much older in some timelines before he abandons her, or this is a timeline from a different Rick that, like, I mean, who is that Beth that he has raised? I don't know. Like, obviously this isn't his Beth. It's not his Morty. In his timeline, there was never a Morty. I just thought that was another thing that I was kind of like, how do we know which of Beth's memories are real versus which ones are from a different Rick? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I guess how much do they lean into the concept of the infinite here? Because there should be a various, you know, states of Beth in infinite supply, right? So there will be ones where Rick abandoned her when she was 2, and ones where he abandoned her when she was 15, and ones where he never did. So,
right.
Is that something they're playing with at the same time, or are they trying to do something more concrete? I don't know.
Okay, there's one other grand unified Rick theory, the Gurr theory, that I want to bring in, and that's the topic of Diane, which is Rick's lover, wife, girlfriend, something. Is it possible, or is it a cool idea, that even in a multiverse, there are some things that just are inevitable to happen? Like, there isn't, like, an infinite version of this particular event. For example, like, Diane's death or abandoning Rick or whatever the hell she did is so seemingly universal in this finite curve we've been talking about that we've never seen a Diane variant. We've never seen a Beth that still has a mom in her life. We've never seen, you know, some space Diane come back to get vengeance on Rick. We've never even seen any Rick's hint that that's something that they contend with. Mm-hmm. Like, is it possible that even in the multiverse, something, like, inevitably goes wrong with Diane? Like, that is something that all Ricks converge into a singularity. Is that a cool idea, or am I mean,
it could be, certainly. I like time travel stuff is one of my favorite genres, and they'll play with that a lot, right? That there's one certain thing that happens in the timeline that cannot be changed, and that is kind of the nexus of all of the different branches of the timeline and things like that. I think those ideas can be cool. I don't know what the Pickle Rick audience thinks of those ideas. But yeah. we could find out.
Like, yeah, like they've always poo-pooed time travel on Rick and Morty. Like even Rick, yeah. Rick himself like has a dim view of it. And I think they illustrated that with that snake time traveling mm-hmm. episode, the where like Rick could probably travel through time, but like he knows that it would instantly turn. It's kind of like the reason we don't have nuclear wars today is because everyone knows it's a too terrible of a possibility to contemplate. Like it's something that like Ricks are respectful enough that they know like, well, if one of us starts doing the time fuckery, we all will, mm-hmm. which means we all lose inevitably forever. So it's kind of like a mutual assured destruction thing.
Yeah, it's like a macrocosm of the decoys episode, right?
Right, exactly. On a grander scale, except for their full fidelity Ricks going at it, hammer and thong. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, like, it'd also be interesting to see if they ever do, like, a Rick Civil War to where Rick annihilate, like, they could go really dark where Rick decides it's not enough that we've eliminated like the nihilist Ricks, like if we're going to go down that, you know, personal pet canon, but like I need to preserve my family, I need to eliminate all Ricks but me, and all Ricks simultaneously get that thought, and then only the Rickest Rick emerges victorious from that
that tournament of Ricks kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I don't know where they're going to go with that. The last big canon implication I thought of was we saw in, this goes back to season one lore, the episode Close Rick Counters of the Rick Kind, mm-hmm. where they first established the Citadel of Ricks, and he was brought up because there was one Rick that was trying to eliminate Ricks from the timeline and harvest all their Mortys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the big reveal at the end of that was there was this evil Morty who's the Mortiest of all Mortys. So just to ground this, one of the things that the evil Rick that was in the thrall of the evil Morty was doing was going through Rick's memories. And one of the memories he extracted was Rick kind of holding baby Morty. Right. What is, like, if Rick abandoned Beth when she was a child...
Mm-hmm.
How was that possible? Just like using his portal gun to come in and like visit him? Was this baby the Rick's actual baby Morty? Was he the one that is he going to end up being the actual evil Morty variant? I don't know.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like, that's got to be a real memory. So when is that when Rick decided to come back in their life? I'm trying to get like hints about the timeline just from the stuff that we now know from this episode. I don't know.
Yeah, man. I feel like, I don't know. Do they have an idea of where this is all going? Are they intentionally guiding this, or are they planting seeds that they'll come back to later and figure out?
It feels very gardenery. Kind of,
it really does.
Like an architect, it feels like they're allowing things to sprout. They're pruning things mm-hmm. with escape clauses, like, well, it's all just a memory, or it was all something that Rick was saying to an alien to get an upper hand.
Right.
And but they are still, though, building. You know, these are starting to fall in place, and I think there's some pieces of canon that they can't get away with retconning at this point. But they could twist and subvert it, like.
For sure.
We know the evil Morty is not our Morty, but it mm-hmm. could be because we see Morty getting more and more violent and more, you know, I guess he's still maintaining his core goodness of Morty. But like, what if like our Morty kills evil Morty and it's not a victory? It's like, you know, he just becomes an even worse version of evil Morty.
Sure. He becomes like the Luke Skywalker if he had killed Darth Vader.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I could see something like that happening. I just don't, I'm not sure that that's where they're pushing the show, or if they're pushing the show in a direction at all. I think like the thing you said about them sort of leaving outs and clauses for themselves to wiggle out of that stuff is right. I think with as much time as they have ahead of them, planning that kind of stuff would be folly, just because in 5 years or whatever it takes to get through the rest of the series, they could have some better ideas, right? That Google document you're talking about could fill up with some shit that's way better than anything they came up with a year ago. And why are they going to like pigeonhole themselves into one particular plot or one particular avenue for the story to go if they have all of this time, this guaranteed time left?
Right. Yeah, I wonder if they feel like if they and at what point do you start locking shit down and start heading towards an end game?
Right.
Because like at one hand, they have all the time in the world. They have, you know, as much show laying ahead of them as they do behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But every year that's going to be less and less the case. And it's going to be more and more of this lore is going to be kind of start to crystallize and fans and there's going to be expectations. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting creative problem. Because they have so much runway, but it's not infinite. And if you don't manage it well, your garden can get, you know, look at what happened to fucking Martin. He got 70% of the way through his magnum opus and then, oh, shit, you know.
How is Community on this? Did Community have like some grand thesis that it was going for at the end? Or was it more of an episodic like week by week sort of? Thing.
No, it definitely had like long arcs about, you know, how characters felt about each other and why characters are still at the school and what they're trying to achieve and the friendships and all that stuff. But it was like, it's so weird because like Dan got fired for a season.
Right.
And then it got brought back and it got canceled and then it went on hiatus and then Yahoo of all places bought it up. And how fans feel about the Yahoo seasons, it's tough to say. Like, it feels like what happened in Community is it kind of whimpered out.
Gotcha.
But that's always the danger of these procedurally driven shows that have a little bit of lore, right? They don't usually, it's not like Dan, it's not like Vince Gilligan famously had, I want to go take a high school chemistry teacher from Mr. Chips to Scarface.
Yep.
Dan and Justin did not approach this project in that way. It's more of a Chris Carter X-Files. You know, Mulder's got this thing where his sister's got abducted and Scully's the skeptic, and that's just going to be the engine that drives this show. It's engine versus destination. I don't know. But like, I just know that Dan, I don't think Dan wants to fuck it up. And I throw in that quote from the Comic Con about him respecting the audience's passion as evidence that like he might fail, but I don't think it's going to be because he got too rich and famous to give a shit about his professional creative reputation.
Gotcha.
I mean, you can count on his ego if nothing else, I guess.
And me as an audience member, personally, I'm not looking for some grand thesis. I'm not looking for like this to all be perfectly tied into a neat little bow at the end. I'm just enjoying the show for what it is week by week. I don't need it to be anything specific other than funny and Rick and Morty, right? Like I know the vibe that Rick and Morty brings and I want the show to be that. But beyond that, as long as it's funny, I'm in.
Yeah. It's weird because like I was trying to think about like how much I buy into the narrative that like Rick and Morty is bad this year and how much of it is like the show still trying to find itself and find the mix between the king. Cause like I'm thinking Simpsons, like I know like people widely consider like the first 10 years, the Simpsons golden age or whatever, but like the first two seasons were really pretty uneven and don't feel Simpsony in retrospect. And where like Rick and Morty had just like this run of success. And now like maybe they're having some of the growing pains in these later seasons as they're trying. But also Simpsons never tried to inject canon, like some, you know, shit happened that kind of accumulated. They'd use it for gags and shit. But like, yeah, you know, Bart never is going to fucking shave. Homer's never going to like, you know, pull his head out of his ass. Marge is never going to leave him. There's like that. Whereas in Rick and Morty, even though there's a little bit of that with like Rick or Morty and Summer, it does feel like big things are happening and changing.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
That's another weird friction that the show is going to have to resolve is like, how do you keep up the eternal family facade of the Simpsons while really having like growth? And I guess I always thought that the the interdimensional stuff would add that stuff. But now I'm like, I don't know. I think maybe they'll try to like tackle it head on.
Yeah, they might go for something bigger. And it's not just even the character drift, right? What do we call the flanderization of characters?
Right.
Because that does happen also in shows like this, but they're intentionally doing things. They're emotionally flanderizing these characters, right? Where their backstories are being filled out. We're learning more about their mental states in any given moment. You don't give a shit what's going on in Homer Simpson's head, right? Nobody cares.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You do give a shit what's going on in Rick's head in this show. Because that's kind of, if there's any like overarching sort of plot, it's like what kind of person is Rick, I guess? You know, and can he change? Can he grow and improve and become a better Rick? And I think that's like the major thing I look for when I'm thinking about canon is not necessarily like, oh, this plot point connects to that plot point. And, uh-huh. and that stuff does exist, but it's more like, what is the emotional arc of these characters? And, you know, that is something that I definitely believe that the writing team is considering when they're writing these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, you know, that's all part of the fucking the emotional story circle, I guess.
Yeah. And there's the, you know, because like I could see people like listening to this in a vacuum and be like, well, you guys like always bitch about like these character treadmills on The Walking Dead where a character is like this way and then they go back to be that way and they go back. They just kind of like, and like, how's that different than Rick being like nothing matters versus what matters is you versus like, and I'm like, I don't know, because I feel like the more you learn about yourself, the more you understand yourself at a deeper level. Like you might start off like in your 20s, like I hate my dad. And then, you know, in your 30s, you realize I am my dad. And then your 40s realize I know why my dad is the way he is. I understand the ways I outgrew him. And I like it's not like the version before was a lie or a flip flop. It's just you get a lot more perspective and, you know, introspection and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like this is like every time Rick goes through these cycles of like being nihilist and wanting to give up versus we always get a new wrinkle of like, what's underlying, like the fact that like this Blood Gulch or Blood River, or what I'm sorry, my notes are on a cell phone. It's hard to scroll through them. But the fact that that was his Vietnam, not because it was a crushing military loss, but because he was too young to understand what really did matter in the multiverse, which are genuine friends and loyalty and things like that. That like those aren't, you can't just like pop to a new universe and step into another bird person and like this is your best friend bird person. It's not the same. I to me it's like that's night and day different than like the other character treadmills we've seen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm with you. It's the thing that excites me about Rick and Morty and always has, you know, it's why the therapy episodes are interesting. It's why you know, flipping the keys to a different dimension to Rick or like a different family or whatever becomes such a big, oh my God, kind of moment, right? Because it matters what these characters are going through emotionally in a way that The Simpsons never will.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I've really been, using you like a canon idea speed bag, just really working it over. Did you have some things in this episode did you want to talk about?
I mean, I guess the biggest thing I noticed is these other crazy Ricks. I don't know, you know, we're all in Bird Person's head here, but there's like an army of Ricks, and kind of to your point about this Rick Civil War or something, there are a bunch of Ricks shooting at our young Rick, I guess.
Memory Rick, yeah.
Sure, I don't know what to call these Ricks because they're all Ricks that just, and they're all memory Ricks, but who knows? And there seems to be like a thing there where they might have killed Beth. It's because they shout like when they're shooting at each other, you know, killing us won't bring her back, and we're assuming that that's Beth or Diane. I guess there's
both,
there's not any like concrete way to say which one they're talking about, but
It's probably useful from a storytelling perspective.
For sure. But there's definitely something there where like Ricks did this to other Ricks. And so, yeah, I mean, if you want to go on the like Civil War Rick thing, sure. I could see that being them laying the tracks for that here. Or, you know, at least that's what Bird Person thinks, right? It could be that that's what Rick told him. And this could be like a self-sabotage sort of thing, because Rick does that a lot, right? Where he's his own worst enemy. Maybe he blames himself for Beth's death or Diane leaving him or dying or whatever happened to her. And so he's like told Bird Person that it was this band of Ricks that came in and killed her. And, you know, when in reality, it was just he drove them away or something like that.
Interesting.
You just never know.
Right. Like, you could tip this telescope from the other end and see, like, I guess Rick is the bad guy, and he's like, but he's full of regrets. Like, that would be a really dark thing. The fact that Rick was actually on the Nihilist and he was eradicating. But, yeah.
I think his behavior, like, who he is drove her away, and he regrets that, but also he won't admit that.
Ricks who are just kind of accepting their life and like trying to like, and Rick's trying to get revenge of them, or they still have their Beth and their Diane, and this Rick who drove him away with his crazy behavior is wanting to get revenge on that. I don't think it's the plain reading of the dialogue, but it's definitely there.
It could be,
which again could be, that's what I'm saying, from like, The more we talk about it, it is kind of amazing how, yes, they have stitched the canon a little bit tighter, but also there are a ton of outs and different points of view, Ben Kenobi type of bullshit that they could pull with this stuff.
Yeah, so that's all the canon stuff I was really reading. All right, let's take another quick break and then come back with some more thoughts.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, I got a bunch of things I want to talk about, but like, what do we make of the fact that Rick's computers universally are misanthropic? Like he said, it's like it takes an asshole to make one. But like, why does he do this to himself?
I don't know. Because you're right, the car is like that. His garage is like that.
It's weird because they're all servile. Like, they're desperate. Like, even the car and the garage both are terrified of pissing Rick off. Mm-hmm. But they also love to, like, tickle that dragon. Like, they try to find, is that because Rick does it? It's weird because, like, you know, Tony Stark, they reference Jarvis here in this episode. Because, obviously, right?
Right.
And, like, Jarvis was snarky, but Jarvis was 100% servile and, like... I think Tony showed frustrations with the limits of some of his like robots and shit, but Jarvis was cool. He wasn't a dick. He wasn't like oppositional defiant to, you know, mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. Why does Rick make this AI so fucking like he has to win verbal duels against it to get it to where or get to the point where the computer thinks he's actually going to do it harm before it actually gets behind and starts giving him useful things to work with. It's just, I think it's wild. What does it say about him?
It is, yeah. It kind of also funny when you think about it on that level.
Oh, it's hilarious, yeah. But it's also like, is he doing this like wearing a hair shirt? Like it's, right. I'm an asshole and I don't deserve a pleasant interface. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Rick's a complex guy.
He is a complex individual, you would say. The other, I guess this is not a Loki canon implication, but I think they've just spun off two new characters that are going to be important to ongoing lore. Let's talk about them one at a time. First is memory, bird person's memory of 35-year-old Rick.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this character? Like, he's that's just going to be a new character in the show, right?
It could be. I mean, he seemed reluctant to be Pinocchio'd at the end, I guess. You know, he's like, hey, if I'm gonna eventually become you, can we just pretend we had that beer? Can you remember us having that beer?
Oh, essentially, like, I want to try to now run the opposite direction of your life, and that doesn't mean... But, like...
Right.
It's also... There's a lot of really cool narrative things they can do with essentially Rick... But as his altruistic, more noble friend wants to remember him as.
Okay.
Like, it could be the literal angel on Rick's shoulder. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like, or something that inspires our Rick to be better. Or, I don't know. There's something interesting about making this character real and him sticking around in a show. And I've seen him, I've seen other shows do this, or not shows, but like, I'm thinking about particularly the Dresden Files. Has had a couple arcs where the main character can have a conversation with an alternate version of himself that like gives you like unique character insights and like, you know, it's like the Socratic dialogue between the two selves. Like, I think that would be interesting in Rick and Morty. And also, it's an incredibly powerful ally for Rick.
Yeah.
You know, like how many Ricks have an idealized, invincible, ennobled younger version of themselves at their side in a war? Maybe a lot of them do. I don't know.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, has the inciting incident for turning young Rick into our Rick already happened? Was that the Blood Ridge thing, right? Because, you know, Rick is constantly warning him throughout this episode about, hey, you don't want to see how Blood Ridge ends, right? It's not as cool as you hoped. And it's not about the battle. It's about, like, hey, you invited this friend on this journey with you and he turned you down. That was more it. So I don't know. Has he already been set on that path toward becoming the old Rick that we know?
That's interesting, because like a lot of people say the inciting path is probably Diane slash Beth, but maybe there's multiple ones. Like,
you got
the simple Rick plan that gets derailed when Beth dies, and you've got the kind of like freedom fighter Han Solo Rick that dies when he essentially turns his back on Chewbacca.
Revenge Rick, yeah.
Revenge Rick. And then you might have like the Ricks that like are the sad versions of Rick that moves in with their an alternate version of their family. Like, there's lots of like what bends the arc of a Rick and which one is the inside. That's God damn, that's a fucking complex tapestry.
Yeah, right. Especially when there are infinite, you know, permutations of that, right?
Right, right. So
we'll see. I mean, it's certainly much more interesting to meet a real version of that Rick than to have this Rick kind of floating around in our Rick's head, right? I don't think like you can go to that well too many times in the future if young Rick is just in his head. I think he needs to get out of Rick's mind and into the real world, and then he can come back in multiple ways and we can see how he's changed outside of Rick's influence, I guess.
So I guess that's a question. Does the young Rick take Rick, older Rick, up on the idea to be made real, or does he keep hanging out in his subconsciousness? Or yeah,
and we really don't know at the end of this episode. Like, Rick invites him to become real and have that beer, but he seems reluctant.
So before we reminded me talking about the garage and the car. Before we get to the child of Tamothy or Tamantha and Bird Person, the other characters, like, I guess broadly speaking, the Rick's AI, because like the car AI is built up to a character enough that like I could almost watch an episode of the car fucking around.
Sure.
Okay. Well, now the garage is, they're making a similar deep character, but what can the garage do? The garage is like stuck. It's a finite, it's not ambulatory. This is exactly why I think
that young Rick would be much more interesting as a real outside Rick's head character, because there just isn't much possibility. Like all the adventure needs to come to the garage, whereas if the car can go off and have adventures, create its own adventures. Right. I don't know what the garage can do.
Is that going to be like, is there going to be like a war for supremacy between the AIs because the garage is eternally jealous that it can't go anywhere and the ship gets to go anywhere? But on the other hand,
like, that might already be true. If you look at last week's episode, not last week, but the Bruce Chadback episode. The car is parked outside the garage. Maybe there's already a feud between the AIs.
Oh,
where
you're right.
The garage won't allow the car to park in there.
Yeah, there's a big saucer shaped section where the garage, it could pull into the garage, but it never does because there's turf war. That's interesting. I like that. But like, do you think that there'll be like some kind of genuine weird romance developing between the neighbor that apparently is down to have his dick sucked? Like, he's bopping up to that house with a wheelbarrow full of sci-fi gear, humming "I'm getting my dick sucked by garage tune."
Yep.
Is there going to be like scenes of like this guy scurrying out of the garage right before Rick? Like,
there should be
at least a stinger. There's at least a stinger to this character, I'm saying.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, and that leads us to what are we going to call this character? Bird Daughter?
Sure.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive and put her in a intellectual cage by naming her, but
I've called her Bird / Tammy Person, but I don't know.
Bird / Tammy. Oh, Bird - Tammy Person.
Yeah.
That's okay. So Bird - Tammy Person.
Looking very Caster Troy in this stinger, for sure.
Very Caster Troy. So they got, I wonder if, I mean, because like I could see two ways for this character to go. Like, obviously, it's a counterpart. Rick and Bird Person can have Rick and Bird Person adventures with Morty and Bird - Tammy Person as his counterpart to Morty. And that sounds like a fun idea, right?
Yeah, until Morty starts getting attracted to Bird Tammy Person.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't even think of that.
Shit gets weird.
Well, I mean, that's it sounds entertaining, and at least it's not a fucking weird incest baby. I mean, that would be like nothing particularly gross about the daughter and grandson of friends kind of pairing off. I mean, you know,
other than the bird part. I don't know. Does bestiality extend to bird people?
No, because like it's a okay. bird person is a non-human intelligence. He's not a beast. Right. He can give consent.
True.
He can, make his preferences to sexual companions know, all that kind of stuff. And so is Tammy. So
is it xenophility?
Yeah. I mean, sex with aliens? Like Riker is a xenophile. You know, he's fucking, you know, chicks with different numbers of fingers and legs and shit under faces and all that kind of. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's it really takes pansexual up a notch.
Right.
Oh. Well, I guess we need to talk about that too. But like staying on the bird slash Tammy person, that's one way for them to go. It's just a Morty analog to be for bird person. The other one is like very feral, very tortured, this character.
Oh yeah.
Powerful ally for evil Morty. Like
sure.
there's a fall of Tammy bird person ahead of us.
Yeah. I kind of like that more.
I wonder if that will, because like there's also some legitimate friction between, you know, whatever, you know, like the bird person is pretty judgy about Rick's moral outlook that Rick has come by honestly.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, those kind of like when you're actually looking down on a friend or holding them in like a little bit of contempt, that has to be resolved at some point. Because that's just like a tension that can't like just undermine a friendship, right?
Yeah.
So like if Tammy, like bird slash Tam bird hyphen Tammy person falls to evil, I wonder if that will like, you know, make bird person a little bit less judgy about some of the mistakes that Rick has made and some of the things that has happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because their relationship is a bit rocky at the end because of bird person's correct analysis of Rick strategically using the knowledge of his daughter on him.
Yeah, for sure. Though less rocky than it was at the start of the episode, right?
I suppose. Yeah. He's like bird person's no longer wanting to kill Rick.
Right.
He's not programmed for murder. Yeah. For sure. What else do we want to talk about?
I just like the concept of being in bird person's head and everything kind of like destroying itself. Like he's literally thinking himself to death here. He's blowing his own mind, literally.
Yeah.
That was all super cool. I love the actual battle of Blood Ridge. Like that is, I don't know. The animation is super cool. And then the music they use is just like, hell yeah. The scene is really awesome.
80s synth. Yeah.
Uh-huh, and then this kind of does rule.
Chest to chest with the flying Death Blossom end. Yeah, it was cash money.
Yeah, I found myself like pumping my head, getting into this scene.
I also like the continuing inventiveness of like Rick taking like, okay, I'm inside his brain. And he's got vague memories of my technology that I can cobble together. And then the reusing of the Morty mind blowers is kind of like him being able to deploy these like memory grenades to blow holes into like the blow new neural pathways and the bird person's. But I thought that shit was all. And it's like one of those things where like, I don't think it strictly makes sense, but it made a lot of like Rick and Morty universe sense where like, I'm like, oh, of course this would happen.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out the rules here as we go, and I couldn't tell if like Rick, if our Rick was able to sort of control things and change things in Bird Person's mind to any degree, or if he was simply operating under the rules that Bird Person had established in his own head, because there is that scene with the portal gun where young Rick tries to make a portal and walk through it, but Bird Person doesn't know what happens when you go through the portal, so he couldn't. But So he didn't know where the portals went, but he did see at some point in the past Rick strapped the portal gun charge to a laser rifle to make an explosive device.
Or that like he's got a vague enough awareness and Rick is smart enough to cobble together from this like Legos of mental fragments, some kind of thing that does work.
Or if that rule only applies to the figment of Birdman's memory that is young Rick, and our Rick is able to create and change things inside this world through his serum, yeah, whatever he's using to enter his mind.
Yeah, because he can also like just go from raw materials lying around in some of his fragments and build, like he said, this like advanced cognitator that allows him to like bypass a lot of the... the Andy, or is it Charlie Kaufman?
Yeah, Charlie Kaufman bullshit.
All the Charlie Kaufman bullshit, like right. Which I thought was a nice reference.
Yeah, they've referenced him a couple of times this season already.
Speaking of that big battle, like I also thought it was cool to see Rick unironically rolling with what can only be called a Vindicators type group.
Yeah.
They're all metahuman, superhuman. Like, mm-hmm, and like enthusiastically about it, and you can kind of see how like why Rick would be like a little jaundiced about rolling with the, or he does it because Morty thinks it's cool, but like, you know, this is shit that I did like for real, not in a comic book kind of way, and it's, you know, it's a painful memories. It's more than just Rick doesn't want to indulge Morty in some comic book fantasies, I think.
Yeah Rick is very picky. He picks and chooses what he allows himself and people around him to indulge in without being called children or, you know, simps, shit like that, right?
Yeah, I wonder what the other thing is, like, I wonder what the implication when we see Rick give this spiel to Bird Person after Blood Ridge, mm-hmm, that like, you know, hey, you could, he says nothing matters, but you matter to me.
Yeah.
And then Bird Person's like, well, I don't think it's worth my kind of like integrity to, you know, our relationship's not worth me giving up my integrity. I wonder what that meant, because like Rick responds with like, well, you know, I guess we could have done cool stuff that matters, but you just want to, what in Rick's mind is stuff that matters if nothing matters?
Right.
Just things that he wants to do in the moment.
I don't. No, because like once you get into that mindset, literally nothing matters. Literally.
Right. Except for the things that you decide yourself matters.
Yeah, which, but if you actually believe that nothing matters, how can you decide that something matters?
Because it gives you pleasure in the moment. That's the thing, is like, it's like it's just pure hedonism.
Yeah,
like
I suppose it would be.
The only thing that matters is an awesome experience that blows your mind. And it doesn't matter whose expense it is. It doesn't matter because all that shit is not real. But what is real is your... Like, I wonder if Rick could talk himself into, like... I've seen this in a sci-fi concept of, like, what if in the future computers can plug us into a simulation that just does nothing but perfectly stimulate all of our pleasure centers? Mm-hmm. So that we spend our entire human life in a state of perfect bliss.
Yeah.
Is that still a human experience? Is that something that we would want? But, like, Rick could do it to himself if he really believes, mm-hmm, like, at the end of everything that, like, that's all that matters. Like, I don't know. Why doesn't he do that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that makes me think that he doesn't truly believe what he's saying, right? That, because, yeah, I mean, taken to its ultimate conclusion, that is where you would go. Like, the only thing that matters is my happiness, or my it's not even happiness, right? It's my pleasure in any given moment, mm-hmm, making me feel good. And I don't think he manifests the behaviors of someone who truly believes that that is the only point of existence.
The other piece of this that might make sense is, like, Rick refers to the illegal drug that he was doing with Bird Person at this concert was synth. Let me see if I can get this right. Syntholed mempathate. And one of the, this is a fictional synthetic thing, but like empathy is the root word that's at the tail. So it's in synthetic. Okay. Empathy. Is that going to be something that, like, the reason that Rick and Squanchy and Bird Person are even a friendship is because they all did a synthetic form of empathy inducing? Like, that's the thing, yeah, that made Rick care? Like, that's kind of like, I mean, I think it's a plain, it's a possible reading of the scene.
Oh, true.
You go with my insane kind of like, you know, fake Greek derivative of this drug. But like, it's also kind of dark that like, it's just a random drug interaction that made Rick care about these people.
I mean, but that seems true to life in some instances. Like, there are certainly people out there who are only friends because they like to drink together, or only
for sure.
Friends because they, you know, met in high school, got high in your garage, and just did that for 4 years, right? And then, you know, once they grow out of that phase or something, and the drug or the habit stops uniting them, they just stop being friends. And I think that is like more real than a lot of shit that Rick and Morty gets up to half the time.
Yeah, and not to go like full on Merovingian from the Matrix, but like, what is love except for a chemical soup of hormones,
sure,
and electroneural shit going on in your brain? Like, you know, you see someone, makes pee-pee happy, you fall in love, and then you make other versions that are half you and half that person, and the hormonal impulses to love those people too. And like, mm-hmm, I don't know, like it's synthetic, but it's no less real. With the empathate or whatever they're taking.
The results are no less real, right? The effects of it.
Yeah. I also really like, I'm really hoping the memory Rick stays around, because there's something kind of refreshing about how not jaded he is. Like, he thinks he's jaded, but like, you know, he's having an absolute ball. Like, I like watching him in the background doing cool shit, like this action movie hero shit. Like, the whole time, like, Rick is having a conversation with Tammy and Bird Person in what I think is supposed to be a warthog from Halo, which might be a Blood Ridge, Blood Gulch reference. Like, it might be, I don't know how many references deep it is, but he's just like back there manning the sci-fi 50 caliber gun the entire scene, just having a ball, blowing away Federation troops and shit. Like, I don't know. Like, it's cool to see that version, that like very energized version of Rick running around the show.
Yeah, outside of a Gotron episode that doesn't really make a lot of sense for that character.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I don't know. I like also like some of Bird Person's like bird phrases, like, you know, I don't want to pull threads. It's a disruptive and feline activity. like, you know, he's got this deep-seated distrust of like cats because they evolved from birds. I thought that stuff was really funny. One last, don't be gross, Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been described as a seed person. Well, I've certainly enjoyed your seed. Like, oh god.
And seeing Squanchy in his stand-up phase, it's pretty good.
It's also funny, like, you're Rick being outraged that Bird Person's fucking Tammy on his workbench, but like Bird Person trying to be like, well, Squanchy was, I of course would have used a Squanch closet, but Squanchy was in there squanching. So that was really funny. I mean, there's a lot of just really solid callbacks, like all this shit, like the photo of Bird Person and Rick in a band. That was like literally the first day they met. There's so much, like, even going back to that fan art painting. That dude envisioned Rick having a primitive portal gun rifle looking thing, and you see that's the thing that Rick is using in this episode. Like, they pulled that out of the fan painting and put it into episode, which must make that guy, like, I don't, you know, feel super good about himself. Probably gonna show, because he's still selling prints of that. You can buy it, like, just like Dan Harmon did for his mantle. So I don't know if sales of that might be going through the roof right now.
Yeah, that's cool. And there's a graduate reference, I think, with the pantyhose stuff, like putting pantyhose on in direct sight of the living room or whatever. I think that's a graduate reference.
Yeah, and it's like, well, it's, you know, there's much more culturally accepted. I like when the show just gets really meta like that, that it's, you know, and
there's
like a lot of yeah, like, it reminded me of that story in that comes out of nowhere in, what was it? Saving Private Ryan, where one of the guys says that this older woman took him into this private thing and showed him her boobs before he shipped off to war because she wanted to have the new memory. It's like, if you told that straight up today, it's like, what, this 50-year-old woman flashed her tits to this, what, 17 going on 18 guy who's about to die? And what kind of fucked up shit is that? And it's all right, but also we understand that, like, we were literally more culturally primitive. Like, if you keep going back and understanding what does bad things to kids, and we're still completely fucked up. And you see that a lot in, like, you know, people's attitudes towards when teenage girls get molested by older men versus teenage boys getting molested by older women. And I like it when the show, there's, it's not even a joke. It's just like, hey, this stuff is fucked up, right? But it's still valid to reference it.
Sure.
Okay, I think we covered all the bases, which means it's probably time to get to feedback. We didn't have a lot of feedback this week, but we did have a piece, rickandmorty@baldmove.com, if you want to discuss any of the crazy canon implications. I mean, you got a full month to send in your best guess of to what this is going to impact canon. Had our psychologist friend Tom offer to do a character analysis, a deep psychological profile on him. Maybe we'll get to that on the next episode. But anyway, you got till September 5th to send us your best canon interpretations or theories on Rick and Morty, and we can read it. rickandmorty@baldmove.com. First up, or I guess only up, is Psy. Said, after listening to your podcast for episode 7, I was wondering if this entire season could be a simulation to show that Summer, adventures with her instead of Morty would literally ruin their lives. For example, Morty loses a chance to be with Jessica. Morty loses a chance to go see Boob World. Rick is almost taken over by clones. Beth and Jerry become more and more weird. Rick can't control himself. Some of these stakes are higher than others, I gotta say. The Morty losing a chance at Boob World. says, if this would become true, they just end the season with all of them seething in front of the TV to see all these possibilities and tell Summer that adventures with Summer would just ruin the family. Want to hear your thoughts on this.
I kind of love that. That kind of feels very Rick and Morty. It feels very Rick, right? Like, I'm proving to you why the thing you just thought is incredibly stupid, and I'm going to great lengths to prove that to you.
Oh, yeah. Like, when he pulled out the whiteboard to set in the season one, or they said, I'm gonna prove how much you equally meaning nothing to me with math, you know. This has been a long time coming. Yeah, no, I kind of like, if the final two episodes is just one long IDC interdimensional cable show of the family showing Summer all the folly of if they let her run the reins, that's hilarious. But also, I could see widely being perceived as sexist for no good reason.
Oh, okay. Like, I was going to say widely being perceived as a huge waste of time for the rest of the season. But sure, that too.
There's a couple things are problematic about just making it the dumb girl who's icky and gross and can't do adventures. But
the show wouldn't really be sexist, idea. Right? The character would be sexist. Look, there's a difference between a show having a thesis that is sexist and character in a show being sexist and the show using that, right? Like, I don't think it's impossible to depict a sexist character in an otherwise very progressive and interesting show.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And if you want to say, hey, Rick is like sexist against his granddaughter in ways that he's not against his grandson, that's totally valid. It's just like, what do you do with that concept once you bring it up?
Yeah, I agree with that. But yeah, the idea that, like, the whole, that's the thing, is like, I think that if anything would jump the shark, would make Rick and Morty jump the shark, is if they would retcon an entire season through whatever means. Like, I really think some people would just fucking check out. Now, I don't know, like, do Harmon and Dan want to do like a bandwagon cleanse and throw off some of the weaker, I mean, what, but I don't know. I don't, because it doesn't seem like,
if they do, like, they retcon that Pickle Rick never happened. Right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It seems like that was something that they would do to, like, cater to, like, some of the worst impulses of the fans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
retcon that none of the canon episodes ever happened. Evil Morty never existed. The Pickle Rick episode didn't happen. I know that's not canon, but that's one people love. If they really just wanted to trash the memories of everyone who loved this show, sure.
It is interesting, because it's something that, speaking of theses, that might be a thesis the show has, is that the Rick and Morty is at its best when it's just Rick, because they name checked. It's like, you guys got to get out of here. The second you guys get out of here, the chances of a Pickle Rick happening skyrocket. I mean, I don't know, because I don't know all the greatest episodes involve just Rick, because you got all the Citadels of Rick, the Councils of Rick, the Evil Mor- but it's a strong argument that you know, the family just kind of weighs Rick down. Like, would you rather see Rick do some Blood Ridge type shit? Would you rather do Rick get into like misadventures with Morty smuggling mega seeds up his ass, or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think the show needs a good mix. I do. I am nervous because I don't think we're going to get a 2 hour episode or a 1 hour episode of IDC involving Summer's humiliation or not. I think we're going to have yet another year where we don't have an interdimensional cable episode, and I'm kind of sad.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think there's like zero chance of IDC being a part of these next two episodes.
And I don't know why, because it feels like it's like that's the opposite of the Google Docs thing. Like, you know, they don't have to come up with solid IDC ideas. They just need once a year, Dan and Justin to get in the booth drunk and or high, record stupid shit on a microphone for a couple hours and salvage 10 minutes out of it.
Right.
Like, It's what we, why do you not want to give us this? Okay, fuck your canon, fuck your Evil Morty and Citadel of Rick fantasies. I just want more interdimensional cable. And like,
yeah,
they're agonizing over pleasing you canon motherfuckers. What about us IDC refugees, huh? That's what I want to see.
Yeah, do we not matter? Come on.
Apparently not, because we're gonna go. We're now three seasons, mm-hmm. unless they're I don't know. I can't imagine a 1 hour IDC or just them pairing up with a random interdimensional cable episode with some heavy hitting lore shit.
Right.
But like, it feels like we're gonna be 3 years. We're gonna get another fucking Mr. Meeseeks episode before we get an IDC, and that's crazy to me, because it's such a slam fucking dunk. It feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I understand the idea of not wanting to wear out the concept, but also it's been 3 years at this point. Plus, and then like, longer in real like time.
It seems like it's a win-win, because like, they got to have some A-plots that are not like enough to stretch out 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a solid 10 or 15 minutes, punch it up with IDC.
Sure.
Like, there's so many great, maybe that's the thing, they're just scared of overusing it, but like,
right.
Three seasons gone. I don't think you're in danger of overusing it, or it's overstaying its welcome, boys. I really don't.
Exactly.
Anyway, I think that's it for us for Rick and Morty. It's a supersized episode. This is, I think, I don't know. Do you think it's the best episode of the season?
It's not a pressure. I think if it were funnier, I would be saying yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like this stuff. I just wasn't as entertained by it as some of the others earlier in this season.
Well, that's like I said, we're going to be, I guess, on a surprise hiatus for a couple of weeks. But we will be back for the supersized finale edition. If you are looking for other things that we're doing right now, we are there's Walking Dead coming back. If you like zombie shit, that's coming back for its final episode in just a week or two. And we're going to have full coverage of the final season of The Walking Dead season 11. What else we got, Jim?
We got some first run movies coming out. I don't remember which ones.
We just saw the Suicide Squad, but we got Eternals. We got the new James Bond, No Time to Die, coming up. We got the Top
Candyman
Gun Maverick.
Is the next one, I think.
Got Candyman, that's right. Really excited about this this reboot of Candyman, or remake of Candyman. We got that going on. And then each week, until we have some prestige television coming back, we are doing a prestige film. Going back, we did Forrest Gump, we just did Sideways. We got a lot of fun movies. And then, of course, finally, every Sunday at 8 p.m., we do Sci-Fi Sunday. We watch some Star Trek, classic Star Trek Next Generation episodes. We watch some classic sci-fi movies. But it's every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on twitch.tv/baldmove if you want to check that out. But yeah, also follow us on Twitter @baldmove. If you want to keep their thing, you can check out our Discord, our forums, and all that other stuff by going to baldmove.com and checking out our socials. Thank you for listening. Hope you had a great time with this part of the Rick and Morty season. And we're going to shut down for a couple weeks and see you September 5th for some more Rick and Morty. Until that time, I am Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.
Pickle Me This is distributed and produced by Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com.
If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at patreon.com/baldmove
to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at baldmove. See you next time.